so they can spring a surprise on us later in the voyage. You think this message from back home might be enough to make them break their cover? Perhaps, if it encourages them to fiddle with their antimatter engine, and the message really is a trap, they'll light up half the sky. The captain chuckled, a wet, cruel sound, and that seemed to be the cue for him to doze off properly. The rest of the journey passed without incident, but Skye's mind was racing anyway, trying to digest what he had learned. Every time he said the words, they were like a casual slap against his cheek, punishment for his own presumption in doubting Norquinko and the other believers. The sixth ship existed. The sixth damned ship existed. And that, potentially, could change anything. Chapter 18. They took me down to the mulch again. I woke up in the cable car as it was descending through night, rain hammering against the craft's windows. For a moment I thought I was with Captain Balcazar, escorting him across space to the meeting aboard the other flotilla ship. The dream seemed to be getting more insistent, pushing me ever deeper into Skye's thoughts, so that they were harder to shake off when I came around. But it was just me and Waverly in the cable car's compartment. I wasn't sure it was an improvement. "How does it feel? I did a good job, I think." He was sitting opposite me with a gun. I remembered him pushing the probe against my head. I reached up to touch my scalp. Above my right ear was a shaven patch, still scabbed with blood, and the feeling of something hard insisted beneath the skin. It hurt like hell. "I think you need some practice." "Story of my life. You're a strange one, though. What's with all the blood coming out of your hand? Is that some medical condition I should know about?" "Why? Would it make any difference?" He debated the point with himself for a few moments. "No, probably not. If you can run, you're fit enough." "Fit enough for what?" I touched the scab again. "What have you put inside me?"
"Well, let me explain."
I hadn't expected him to be so talkative, but I began to understand why it might make sense for me to know some of the facts. It must have stemmed less from any concern for my well-being than the need to have me primed in the right way. From previous games, it had become clear that the hunted made the whole affair more entertaining if they knew exactly what was at stake and what their own chances were. "Basically," he said urbanely, "it's a hunt. We call it the game. It doesn't exist, not officially, not even within the relatively lawless environs of Canopy. They know about it and speak about it, but always with discretion." "Who?" I said, for the sake of saying something. "Post-mortals, immortals, whatever you want to call them. They don't all play it, or even want to play it, but they all know someone who has played it or has connections with the network which makes the game possible in the first place." "This been going on long?" "Only in the last 7 years. Perhaps one might think of it as a barbaric counterpoint to the gentility which pervaded Yellowstone before the fall." "Barbaric?" "Oh, exquisitely, sir. That's why we adore it. There's nothing intricate or subtle about the game, methodologically or psychologically. It needs to be capable of being organized at very short notice anywhere in the city. There are rules, naturally, but you don't need a trip to the pattern jugglers to understand them."
"Tell me about these rules, Waverly."
"Oh, they're nothing that need concern you, Mirabelle. All you need do is run."